Reveal the Shield cancellation, Linkin Park's Iridescent, Transformers Prime Speed Metal, this is Geek Existence Transformers.
Now, all we need is a little Energon and a lot of luck.
So welcome to Geek Existence Transformers.
I be your host, Eggleg Fearful, and with me be...
Suki Grabbit and Calvatron. I was going to say, I remember when I first got into collecting.
Predacons, terrorize!
Hello, Transformers fans, and welcome to another episode of Geek Existence Transformers, episode number 22, recorded Thursday, April 14th, 2011. I am Weird Wolf, along with my armada.
Insane Galvatron.
Okay, so have you listened to Linkin Park's Iridescent? I know we've been seeing reports that this is going to be the feature song on Transformers 3. And as of, I guess, today, we have confirmation from Mike Shinoda himself of Linkin Park that it is going to be in the film.
Well, I think the more important question to ask is, do you have your taxes done? Because tomorrow's April 15th, the deadline.
Ah, yes. I actually have had my taxes done for some time, and I've spent that money.
Yes,
toward
me too.
BotCon, by the way.
Yes, me as well. I just thought I'd mention it for some of our listeners out there. Of course, by the time you're hearing this, tax day's probably already come and gone. So hopefully you got your taxes done if you're in the U.S. Otherwise, Uncle Sam is not going to be very pleasant. But yes, I have heard Iridescent. Honestly, I had not heard it until a few minutes ago. As we were preparing for the podcast, I gave it a listen. And I'll be honest with you, I mean, I kind of liked their song in the first movie, What I've Done. It was okay. I kind of liked that song. I kind of dug it. I don't even remember the name of the song they had in Revenge of the Fallen. It was okay, but I didn't think it was as good as the first, you know, as What I've Done. And then this song, yet again, you know, it's another step down. I'm not really digging it.
Well, you know, I wasn't really much of a Linkin Park fan, to be honest, until the first Transformer film came out. The only song that they had put out that I kind of liked was In the End. And fortunately, you know, with that song... I heard your laugh there. fortunately, with that song, you know, through the advent of iTunes and purchasing songs individually rather than the entire album... I purchased that song, but, you know, I really didn't want anything else from the album. But now that I've heard more of their songs, especially I liked What I've Done in the first Transformers movie, and I really liked it. And what was the name of the song in the second movie?
I don't remember.
I'm already drawing a...
So unimpressed with it, I didn't even bother learning the name of it. It was just, to me, it was just background music in a movie. New Divide.
Yes, New Divide. Duh.
I just Googled it.
I feel so stupid.
I just Googled it for you.
Brain fart. I guess we're allowed those every now and then. But yes, I like that song. And this song here, I don't like it as much as I do the other two because it's not the type of music that I normally listen to.
Yeah,
but
I
do like it.
You know, the others, I mean, I know they're Linkin Park, and they get a lot of crap for being kind of emo, but at least the other two songs were a little more upbeat than this one. This one sounded a little more somber than the other two. And I like the upbeat music. I'm kind of hyper as it is, so.
Well, I agree with the somberness of the song, but I'm kind of wondering, will it lead to... Or does it lend to some part of the story of Transformers 3? Maybe like Prime dying or something.
An indication of a tone change that this movie is going to be a little more somber than the other two?
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
I'm kind of wondering. You know, kind of foreshadow what we're about to see this summer. All in all, I like the song. I bought the extended version on iTunes because the article was on the... Shinoda's blog, where he confirmed that it will be in the film, said they're actually working on a shorter version of the song for the feature film. So that's why I bought the extended version. You know, like I said, I like it. It's not generally my cup of tea, but I do like it. I kind of have eclectic tastes, I guess. I like all kinds of music. I listen to metal, rap, you know, not all rap. I hate rap generally. Rock, as in classic rock, country. I'll even listen to that.
What about bluegrass? Were you listening to bluegrass? Do you like a banjo?
No. Especially not in Deliverance. But I even like classical, believe it or not. I mean, that's... I know, you know, you don't hear a lot of people say they like classical music anymore. Sure, make fun of me.
I'm not making fun of you. That's classical music. Most people are familiar with classic music, even if they don't know they're familiar with it, because it's so ingrained in different things. I learned that song from a McDonald's commercial years ago. A little girl playing the piano. That's going way back, though.
Your introduction to classical music was through McDonald's.
Well, it wasn't my introduction. It's just that particular song. That's the first time I'd heard it. I've heard other classical music, and mostly, believe it or not, a lot of the classical music I've heard came from Disney cartoons.
Like some of,
well, no, not the stuff like with the princesses and stuff. There were some older Disney stuff that used to come on the Disney Channel when it first debuted. It was older cartoons where it was more musical stuff, and they would just have animals and things just happening, you know, in sequence of the music. It didn't have any of their like cartoon characters. And there was a lot of classical music that played in that. Like one song was called Morning. That's the one when you hear it, you think of like, you know, opening up the shades, and you know, there's the sun and the birds, and you know, yeah, all that music. I heard it as a kid.
Ode to Joy. Okay, aside from Linkin Park and cheeseburgers and Mozart, let's move on to our first segment of the show.
Time now for our
eBay Item of the Week.
Our eBay Item of the Week this week is tying in a bit to one of our later stories in Cybertron News, as it sometimes does, or often does in our podcasts. Reveal the Shield Wind Charger. You want to tell us a little bit about this auction, Greg?
Yeah, it's a... the eBay item number is 1405-348-5-7603. The item location is in the United Kingdom. And, you know, there's not a whole lot to say with this toy. Most people probably heard of it, probably been looking for it, looking forward to it. You know, it's the first Classics update we've had a Wind Charger, and it's a really good one. It really captures his likeness. You know, Scout class figure normally retails $8-$9. But there's a little story behind this, again, without really getting too much into our Cybertron news, which, you know, we will get to in a few minutes. But for the time being, this auction, it's listed at a price of Great Britain pounds, $34.99, which is approximately $56.99 in U.S. dollars, with another $7.99 Great Britain pound for shipping, which is approximately $13. So $70
and
shipped. Yes. That rounds it up because it's $56.99 for the price, so the $13.01. That brings it up to an even $70 U.S. For Reveal the Shield Wind Charger. Now, this is a Scout-class toy that is a new release, just came out, and yet it's $70. And at first you're thinking, okay, what is this sailor smoking? Because he's got to be on crack. But again, when we get to our news story later, you'll understand why he's got this listed for this price and why there's a good chance he will sell it for this price.
Well, you know, they are very hard to find. I don't know, have they came out at all in the United States, or are they just Canada and Great Britain?
The only places I know of in the U.S. that have had them are online retailers like BBTS, TF Source. And I think it's just because they, you know, ordered them. They, you know, because they don't do like the big box stores like, you know, Kmart, Walmart, where they just order a crap load of toys, and if they don't sell as good as they thought, they're stuck with a bunch, so they quit ordering, and so they don't get any of the new stuff. You know, they kind of tend to go by pre-orders and things and just order what they need. So, you know, even if they do have a bunch of previous waves, they're going to go and order the new waves because they know collectors, you know, are going to be buying them, because those stores do primarily sell to collectors. So as far as I know, the only, you know, establishments in the U.S. that have been getting them have been, you know, your online stores. There have been no official spottings anywhere in the United States in a brick and mortar store.
I know I did a Amazon search the other day and found some, but of course they go through the other online toy stores like BBTS. I don't know if BBTS is associated with Amazon anymore or if they ever were to begin with, but you know, I found some on there, but they were exorbitantly priced too. I think the cheapest one I found was around $50 shipped, but whenever I thought, you know, what the hey, I'll probably not be able to find this in the stores, so I clicked the buy button on it, and it took me to a page that promptly told me that they were out of stock, even though they showed two currently in stock on the for sale page. Well, whenever I went back and reloaded the for sale page, it still read two in stock. I'm like, okay, maybe it was an error. I tried it again, and it said out of stock. Now, this the seller was actually Toy Wiz going through Amazon, mm-hmm. but I've heard Toy Wiz, has been upping their prices gradually as this figure becomes more and more scarce.
Yeah, my understanding is that they just, instead of just changing the price on the listing, it's like they just list it out of stock and relist it at a new price. And what happens is, and they take the old listing, kind of take it down off their own storefront, but any links to the old listing will still go to the old listing. It'll just show out of stock. And I think that's what happens with Amazon, is where they're a seller that, you know, they kind of pay Amazon whatever they pay to, you know, be able to sell their stuff through Amazon. But that's what it does when you're on Amazon. It sends you to that online store that's kind of advertising through them. And so whatever, for whatever reason, they didn't update it, and so it's still sending you to the old listing. Yeah, I'm sure you could have just went straight to Toy Wiz, may have found some in stock, but it would have been much more expensive. I did
go to Toy Wiz, and I did check it out, and yes, it was $15 more.
Yeah, so that's what's happened. They've changed the price, but instead of just changing the price, they made a new listing and deleted the old listing, or maybe obviously they didn't delete it, it still comes up, but they just, you know, showed it out of stock and then took it off their storefront, but they didn't fix it at Amazon, so people still are getting to the old listing and showing out of stock. But again, you know, a lot of people give them a lot of flack over that. They're like, okay, they're Toy Wiz, they shouldn't keep jacking up the price. But at the same time, you know, if I've got something that I know is worth $100, you know, why should I sell it to somebody for $15 just because they think, you know, I'm selling it for too much? I mean, if the market and demand is there to make it worth $100, you know, if I sell it for less than that, I'm ripping myself off. You know, and it's a whole thing about supply and demand, and, you know, that's just the way the free market works. You know, if nobody wanted it, nobody's willing to pay that for it, then it won't sell for that price, and it will come down. You know, the prices are only going that high because people are willing to pay it. And, you know, and that's a problem in the Transformers collecting fandom, is that people don't realize, you know, that, hey, you don't have to pay these exorbitant prices, just don't buy it, and the prices will come down. But the problem is there's always going to be that, you know, one or two people that are like, oh, I have to have it. And so they will buy it at that price, so then all the sellers will follow suit listing it at that price.
Now, I know you picked up a couple Wind Chargers a couple weeks ago. I believe you mentioned them last week on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us, remind the listeners that may not be familiar with Reveal the Shield Wind Charger, what the allure of this figure is, since you actually have one in hand?
Well, I mean, he's nothing like uber fantastic as far as that goes. I mean, as far he's a scout class toy, and he's a pretty good scout class toy. You know, I mean, I mean you could take, say, you know, Hunt for the Decepticons hubcap, and they're very similar as far as build quality and articulation and, you know, in intricacy of design. It's just the biggest appeal of Wind Charger is, as I said earlier, he's the first, you know, real classics update we've had of Wind Charger. You know, Wind Charger is one of those characters that, for the most part, has been forgotten. If he did get in a toy, it was probably just a repaint of something else. Didn't really look like Wind Charger. You know, and so this does. I mean, it's got the head. It looks like Wind Charger. It's a red sports car, which the original Wind Charger, I think, was a Firebird. This one looks more like a Mustang with enough changes made so they don't have to pay royalties to Ford. But that's the appeal. It's the first Wind Charger we've had, and not to mention that Hasbro has had a really good track record with their Scouts lately. That has been like the underdog Cinderella story of the Transformers lines as of late, especially since Revenge of the Fallen, is that their classics, or their Scouts, have just been home runs. I mean, you pretty much buy any Scout from Revenge of the Fallen forward, and it's a good toy for the size class. And so that's the appeal. I was like, okay, it's the first time we've had a Wind Charger. It looks like Wind Charger. It feels like Wind Charger, and it's a Scout class toy, which means it's going to be a good toy. So it was highly anticipated and really sought after. And of course, again, with our new story, we're going to find out why it's, you know, not going to be coming to the U.S. And so that's thus driven up the demand for it. The last toy I remember we had something like this happen to was Energon Ultra Magnus. I think he actually did come out in the U.S., but it was very limited. Kind of, you know, for the same reasons that we're not seeing this. And they were all over the U.K., and people in the U.K. were buying them, selling them on eBay for high prices, because that was a toy that when it first came out, everybody thought it, we saw the gray prototype, everybody thought it was going to be Ultra Magnus because it had so many styling cues, ended up being Overload and all red. So everybody wanted a Ultra Magnus, you know, repaint of it. So Hasbro obliged and put it in, I think it was originally released in Armada as Overload. They released it in Energon as Ultra Magnus with the recolor. You know, just kind of like, you know, doing something for the fans, and it just didn't show up anywhere.
I did recall seeing one of those in the store. I found one in my local Walmart, I believe.
Yeah, I looked for it in store. I never saw it. Like I said, apparently they did get out a few of them, but they were few and far between. Because I think the way it was, it came out like they had their Wave 1, and then they had like Wave 1.5, which is like a revision wave that had Ultra Magnus in it, and then Wave 2 was completely different. So he was only in like a half wave. And what happened was a lot of stores got the Wave 1, so there were no Ultra Magnuses. And it was only the stores that moved a pretty good lot of stuff so that they actually got Wave 1.5 were the stores that got it. And that, those weren't very many, because a lot of stores, like the ones I frequented at the time, got Wave 1 of those Voyagers. And they sat on those for quite a while. And then by the time they sold and restocked, it was Wave 2. And that's why I never saw one. And there's a lot of people that... But, I mean, I hear he shelf-warmed in the U.K. For whatever reason, with the way distribution was, that wave, a lot of it went to the U.K.
Yeah, I remember that. And I wasn't a very big fan of the mold. Having I had the Armada version, Overload, and I really didn't care for it that much. So whenever I actually did see it in the store, I passed on it, even though I knew it was worth something.
Yeah, that was one of those you could have bought it for $20 and resold it for $50. I think at one point it got as high as $75. But again, that was a Voyager at least. I mean, we're talking Wind Charger here is a Scout going for nearly $70.
Yeah, well, I think his character is a little more popular than the Armada one,
right?
That we had.
Well,
but,
I do think this, though, because you mentioned me getting mine. Because I know I told you I got two. And what it was and it wasn't, and I didn't, again, I almost feel kind of bad getting them with the deal I made, but at the time we didn't realize that these things were going to be this hard to get. You know, we just kind of thought, okay, well, I can get them now just in case they don't show up, but everybody kind of expected them to eventually show up. But yeah, I had gotten an extra hardhead at the local TJ Maxx for like $17, whenever those showed up in stores. And, you know, the people in the UK have a hard time finding that toy. I guess it's like non-existent over there. And you know, so they were willing to pay a pretty penny to get one. So I had an extra one lying around because I, you know, stocked up on them when I found them, and just for this reason to have them as trade bait. And these showing up in the UK, I just mentioned on the boards, hey, if anybody can you know, find me a couple Wind Chargers, you know, I'll trade you a hardhead for them. You know, because I knew I wanted two, one to keep as Wind Charger, one to kitbash. And I figure, you know, they're $9 figures, so two of them be $18. Now, I had 17 in the hardhead, so it's a pretty even trade. You know, we both paid shipping ourselves. You know, so I didn't really feel like I was ripping anybody off with that deal. I mean, if anything, they were getting a better deal than I was, because hardhead was worth a lot more than two Scouts. Of course, now that Wind Charger's value's gone up so much, it actually, I did get the better end of the deal. You could easily buy, you know, trade a Wind Charger for a hardhead straight up now, and I got two. But that's how I got them. I traded for somebody in the U.K., now that they're worth more, if I was making the same deal now, I'd have to, you know, probably just trade like a hardhead for one Wind Charger. But if you want one, that's going to be the way to do it. If you want to circumvent eBay and the $70 price tag, if you can find somebody in the UK that can still find one on the shelves that would be willing to, you know, sell it to you at cost plus shipping, you know, they're being a bro. Honestly, I think you ought to offer them a little more than cost plus shipping, just because they're hooking you up with something they could put on eBay and make a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I put out a feeler on TFW 2005 where I normally post, in the once section, and I got a private message for somebody that actually had one for trade. He was looking for a trade, but he offered me Reveal the Shield Wind Charger, Mint on Sealed card, and he said he was looking for a Armada Unicron in return.
Oh, I just had one of those I let go for next to nothing.
Yeah, he wanted an Armada Unicron, and I don't have a Unicron, so I said, well, I don't have a Unicron, but if you're willing to take cash, you know, I'll pay you via PayPal right now. You know, and
well, the shipping to the UK with a Unicron, too, the size of that box, you've really been paying on that.
Yeah. I offered that, and he never did get back to me, so I'm assuming that he's still continuing to look. Because
I got the 2010 Unicron when it came out, and so I no longer needed my Armada Unicron, and ended up trading it for a Japanese animated Rodimus at a Kentucky meetup that we had. You know, which I think at that time you could buy that toy for $25. So I essentially let the Armada Unicron go for $25, which is why I said that would have been a fantastic deal, because you're taking a scout that goes for $70 now, and you know, trading something you can, you know, $25. You know, yeah. I mean, that would have been a good deal.
I would have been, like you said, though, I would have been paying through the nose for shipping, and it would have still came out to around probably about $70. I believe that'll be it for Wind Charger, but if you really, really are in need of a Wind Charger and the auction is still up, by the time I get this podcast on the web, you can get him for $70 from Great Britain. So good luck.
Now it's time for
Mowing My Wallet.
So Greg, speaking about mowing lawns.
Yes, I actually, what made my wallet go ouch, the biggest purchase of the week was a new lawnmower. I don't know, the listeners, I don't know if I've mentioned this or not, but I just bought this house that I'm living in last June. At the time, I was kind of broke because I took everything I had to, you know, down payments and things to get in, and there were some urgent things that kind of needed to be fixed up on the place. Because it was rented before, so obviously renters don't usually take the greatest care of a place. So, you know, I had some repairs to kind of do, and it was one of those deals where I never quite had the $150 to buy a lawnmower. So I had just borrowed one from my church. They had an extra one. And, you know, I was just supposed to keep it for a few weeks, maybe a month or so, until I could buy one. Ended up using it all last summer until the mowing season was over. So this year, like, it's, you know, now that it's back to mowing season in Kentucky, and, you know, okay, I had to take the lawnmower back to church. So I did. And that left me without a lawnmower. And I just recently got a credit card. First one since, you know, way back, because I don't normally like being in debt, but I got a credit card since BotCon's coming up. I've already bought the plane tickets, already bought, you know, pre-registration, all that stuff's non-refundable. You know, I didn't want to come into a position where, okay, I can't afford to make the trip because I'm broke. You know, I won't have any money for food or gas or anything while I'm out there, and, you know, have all that money spent on plane tickets that go to waste. So I thought, I'll get a plane ticket, or I'll get a credit card, that way it's for emergency. You know, if all else fails, I'll have whatever my credit limit is to spend out there to live on. And, well, I went ahead and just used that to buy the lawnmower. That way I can just keep the $150 cash in my checking account as opposed to buying it and then having to lean on the card later. Because it's a new card, I got a 0% interest rate till the end of the year. So I will be paying no interest on the lawnmower, and I get to make payments. So, yay. That's the only off-topic thing I really bought this week other than, like, food. But Transformer-wise, I got a couple things. As you know, I've already had a Reveal the Shield Retgar for a while, and I actually picked up a second one. I don't think I ever really mentioned it on the podcast. You know, put one in motorcycle mode, one in robot mode, had them, you know, riding each other. And then decided I wanted a third one, because I think a guy that goes by the username of Maiden Japan is making an add-on kit for Retgar, where it's a new chest piece that does not hinder transformation, as well as a new head. I think he's going to do like 10 different heads, but I'm only going to probably pick up one, maybe two. So I needed a second Retgar to wear the kit, and then I wanted a third Retgar to leave in motorcycle mode for one of the, you know, either the Retgar or the modified Retgar to ride. So, like, okay, so I picked up my third Retgar. Again, ordered it from Hasbro Toy Shop when, you know, they caught him in stock. He arrived, And the first two retinars I had were in great shape. No stress marks. Everything worked like it should. The third one, he was pretty much a train wreck. He has the stress marks you hear about in the ball joints. He has both of his shoulders are full of stress marks. He even has stress marks in areas where you don't hear of retinars having stress marks. There are missing paint apps on his beard and mustache. And, you know, so I can live with all that stuff since I figure I'm going to modify him anyway. Because I don't want them all having the same colors. Even though he's just going to be for motorcycle mode, I'm going to probably dip him in some color of dye just to change his hues. Probably not a black, just a dark. And I'll probably use like a red or something because it'll mix with the browns and the tans. And, you know, probably turn him a little more orange or something. But it'll just be enough to change his colors enough so, you know, Retgar doesn't just look like he has wheels growing out of his feet and, you know, handlebar coming out of his crotch. Because I found when you put the two together and they're the exact same colors, everything, especially since it's designed to look like junk, it all just kind of rubs together. It looks like a pile of junk with, you know, a Retgar body sticking out the top and a couple wheels. So I think differentiating the colors helps make the rider and the motorcycle more distinguishable from one another. And it just is more aesthetically pleasing, at least to my eye. So I'm really not too concerned with all those issues because I'm going to probably modify him. At least, like I said, dye him. I'm probably going to chop off his beard and mustache altogether, repaint his face, just to try to make him look different. Even though most of that won't even be visible in motorcycle mode, but, you know, I may feel froggy one day.
Well, you can turn the motorcycle upside down and see his face that way.
Yeah, well, right now the way I've got him posed is I've got one of the Retgars riding him, and I've got him popping a wheelie. And so you just, like, use one of Retgar's feet. If you get the wheelie up high enough, it'll kind of balance. So there's like the rear wheel and one of the Retgar's feet that's riding the other one. And it'll stay up pretty stable. So that's so you can see his head right now, the way he's posed. So make the head look a little different. I don't know why you're laughing, but
I'm sorry.
I'm sure something must have sounded dirty. Well, he's riding him, but I don't mean it that way.
Yeah,
but.
And then you proceeded to tell me what position he's in. And
yeah.
I'm
yeah.
Sorry.
We'll refer to this as the missionary position. Okay. When he's riding a wheelie, that's the missionary position. Okay. But no, yeah. Like I said, I may just feel froggy every now and then, transform him into a robot, and maybe put him on one of the other Retgars back into a motorcycle. So that way I only have, you know, one Retgar robot mode. But I'm going to end up getting a couple of whatever. I'd like to have the e-hobby one, but I can't pay that much just for one deluxe. Not right now. But I'm hoping to get whatever generic Junkion, you know, repaint, remold we get of that. I'll probably buy two or three of them as well for the same reasons. You know, one that displays robot, one as a motorcycle, you know, and one with a new head and chest plate to ride the motorcycle. But I'm going to have some fun with this one. Since he's got so many flaws, he's like, okay, he's just going to be my experimentation one to make look different. But the biggest problem I had with this Retgar that really jumped out at me was when I pulled the axe off his leg that kind of connects to the back wheel. Do you have a Retgar now, Daron?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Well, one thing I noticed, if you know, with Retgar is when you pull the axe off, it's got like the four blades, and you can just kind of pull one blade out, and they're like little gears connecting them all, so they'll all kind of flare out together. And there's like a metal pin in the middle holding all this together. Well, when mine was being assembled, they didn't get the pin straight, and they drove it in. So instead of driving it straight through the hole in the middle like it's supposed to, it went at an angle. It actually went through some of those gears. So right now it's permanently locked in the closed position. It will not open because, like I said, where things connected by gears, and you get a pin going through, damaging at least one of the blade's gear mechanism. And it's kind of got the rest of them locked in place. So even if I pull the pin out to straighten it up, those gears are damaged so badly they'll probably never work. Because, you know, the gears are, you know, if you look at it real close, you'll notice the gears aren't much bigger than the diameter of the pin. So if you imagine it going in at an angle and hitting those gears and being driven through them by whatever tool they use to insert pins at the factory, it's done some damage. But again, like I said, he's my Junkion, so he'll just stay in motorcycle mode. So I'm not too...
Well, I was kind of wondering, you know, maybe you could contact Hasbro and see if you could get a replacement axe.
Every time anybody's ever tried to get a replacement from Hasbro, what they tell them to do is return the whole figure, and then they will just send a replacement of equal or lesser value, or of equal or greater value, and you usually just end up getting another deluxe. And it's just of any random figure Hasbro's choosing. It's like they just grab one randomly and mail it to you. Yeah, I've heard of a lot of people trying to do that, and it never works out. You know, the most people would say I'd rather have my broken toy because it was the character I wanted than, you know, than a second of whatever I already had that they sent me. But like I said, if it were my first Retgar, I'd be a little more upset about it. But it was my third, and I primarily got it just so I'd have a Junkion motorcycle for the other Retgars to ride.
So you actually got a Junkion.
Yes, I got a wrecked Retgar, and I don't mind because because it's my third one, and I pretty much got it just as an accessory for the others anyway, and it still functions that serves that purpose. So I'm not too beat up about it. And the last thing I got this week was some stuff from Shapeways, which I don't know if we ever mentioned Shapeways on the podcast before.
You might have in passing in the kit bashing.
Okay.
Episode.
Yeah, there was a lot of information in that episode. But anyway, Shapeways, you can render, if you have a program that allows you to render things in 3D, you can upload them to Shapeways, have them printed, and then they will mail them to you. You've got a fancy 3D printer. It's probably the easiest way to have a hard copy of whatever you can imagine in your head. It's a lot easier than, well, granted, if you know how to use the software. I mean, some people can sculpt and create things out of little plastic sheets and glue and sculpting putty. And I mean, you know, some people are better at doing that. But me, I'm more analytical and logical and mathematical wired. So for me, it was easier to learn the software and, you know, render the stuff in CAD. But yeah, so I printed up, I designed a couple, well, I designed one thing and had it printed. The thing about Shapeways is they have a minimum $25 order. Now, if you make like what I did and had it printed and it came to like $4, they will just charge you the other $21 and then ship it to you. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to pay the $21 anyway, I'm going to buy something else. Because the other thing about Shapeways is you can put your designs up and make like a Shapeways store where other people can buy your stuff that you designed. And the way that would work is, you know, Shapeways will have their amount they charge for printing it and mailing it. And then you can determine how much on top of that you want. So for everyone that sells, you'll get money. And there's he's on TFW boards, goes by the name of Ramrider. He has created what he calls gunslingers, which are basically just little articulated target masters. And he got quite creative with the transformations. It's kind of thing, if a third-party company could make these and sell them for, you know, $10 or $15, they'd be pretty awesome. I'd probably buy them. But I got a feeling they're a little too intricate to hit that price point. But I decided to pick one up. Most of them they kind of looked like the G1 Target Masters, you know, as far as the end result. They were just a little more intricate in the way they got there at the transformation. But he had one that I thought was really unique. I don't remember what he called it. I probably should have looked it up. I'll kind of head to Shapeways while I'm talking here, but it turns into a rifle instead of just kind of, it doesn't look so anyway. I was looking through Ramrider stuff. His store on Shapeways is called Never Growing Up. I went ahead and pulled it up here, and he has several of these gunslingers. Looks like there's seven different ones. He's got these called Sparks, Salvo, Dust Up, Vantage, Truncheon, Backlash, Mayhem. And of all those, the one I picked up was Vantage, because like I said, the rest just kind of look like G1 Target Masters in gun mode, which I think is what he was kind of going for. But Vantage was more unique in that it turns into what looks like an assault rifle, you know, where it's long and slender, you know, it's just, you know, cause when you think of a Target Master in gun mode, you don't picture it looking like this. It kind of looks like, if you have Generations Blur, maybe not as long, but it's that kind of design, that long, skinny, or even cup. It's just like that long, skinny rifle, but yet it turns into a robot mode that looks very much like the rest of them, you know, as far as just a little man-shaped robot. It's a very interesting transformation scheme. It kind of jumped out at me more than the rest as far as it's, you know, being unique. And, you know, it's the price that's on there, I'm looking at right now in the U.S. dollars, is $1,804. So I added that to the cart because that kind of padded it up. And then I just ordered a couple copies of the thing that I made for myself. To get it up over $25. And the thing I made for myself was a head that was designed to fit Classics Cyclonus. And it's designed to look like the character Slipstream, who was an animated. She was the female clone of Starscream. And what happened was another guy by the name of White Mocha was doing a BotCon 2010 Digibash thread This was last year before the theme was announced, where he's like, you know, hey, here's all the stuff I'd like to see. You know, so he made a bunch of different BotCon sets. He kind of went by the rules that BotCon tends to go by. And he designed a bunch of sets. And for one of them, he was doing some animated figures using Classics toys, like moving some animated characters into the Classics universe. And that was one of them he had digibashed, you know, where he took the, you know, he photoshopped, some pictures of, he designed his own head and put on the Cyclonus body, put some teal paint on it, and it actually worked pretty well for a Classics slipstream. So I wanted to make that, you know, a reality. And so I went ahead and, you know, got with SolidWorks was the program I used, to design the head, had it printed out, had it delivered. What I discovered was, in order to fit in for transformation, because Cyclonus has those big rabbit ears to make his head look taller, I had to kind of size everything to fit in transformation mode. Without the big ears, it makes the head look really small. So I've actually had to redo my design and, make the side vents a little larger, so the head will be a little wider without stretching the face, and give, you know, the toy an appearance of a larger head. Because the head was just awesome. Too tiny on that body. And so I'm going to have to get another order from Shapeways, which, again, the head, it's two pieces, you know, front and back half, because I was going to try to cast them. I didn't go three pieces to give them light piping because I can't really cast in clear. I don't have the vacuum chamber. I just have to paint the eyes. But, again, you know, I'm going to face with the same problem. It's going to cost me like $4 for this head, and I'm going to have to pad the order again. So I may end up picking up another Gunslinger. So I'm going to look through, after the podcast is done, I'm going to look through the rest of them and see if there's another one that kind of jumps out at me as being kind of unique. But I mean, I have Vantage. I haven't assembled him yet because it comes in parts. I thought I ordered it in black, but it came in white. I need to go back and recheck my order, make sure I didn't click the wrong thing or they didn't send me the wrong thing. But nevertheless, I'm probably going to paint it anyway. Either color is going to need some detail painting. So black's an easy base color to put on, so I'm not going to sweat it too much. Yeah, so hopefully, you know, another week or two, I will have another Gunslinger to talk about with my improved slipstream head. And that's all I got this week.
Awesome. I'll go to my ouch of my wallet this week, and I got G1 Ultra Magnus 100% complete.
And I saw pictures of it. It looks sweet. Love Ultra Magnus.
That's all I got this week.
You don't. You can't elaborate on Ultra Magnus any more than that?
I can't deal with that right now.
Yeah, that's what he said. Ultra Magnus was one of my favorite toys as a kid. I didn't have him, but he was one of those toys I always wanted, like, really badly. Because I had Optimus Prime, and I could tell by looking at the toy pictures in the catalog that it had Prime's cab, but it had the trailer, and it all transformed together, and I thought that was just the coolest thing ever. And, did not get one until I was an adult, though, but I wanted one so bad.
Yeah, I've actually had multiple G1 Magnuses before.
Magni.
But I had an original one from my childhood, and I still remember to this day how I got it. It was so awesome. A friend of mine, he had a grandmother that was retired from, I believe, the military. She received a really, really large pension check, really large check every month. And where he was an only child, he got just about every toy that he wanted. I mean, G.I. Joe, Transformers, I think he got every toy. As long as you could find it in stores, he would get it. I don't care the price. He and I was living in South Florida at the time, and he and I were playing in his room one afternoon, and his grandmother said that she needed to run into Naples and do some shopping, and she needed us to come with her. So we went with her, and of course, you know, we went to the mall, and they had a children's playland in there. I'll never forget that place. That's also where I got many of my other Transformers. But we went in there, and I saw Ultra Magnus for the first time on the shelf, and he saw it. Well, you know, he knew he was going to get it, so he just picked it up and kind of put it under his arm, you know, kind of knapsack style.
Nonchalantly.
Yeah, he got that. And then, you know, he was doing like we do as normal collectors, you know, kind of rifling through the cards to see which ones they had. And, you know, he picked up a couple others. I can't remember which ones that he got. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, that must be nice. Because, you know, I grew up in a family that, you know, I was lucky if I got anything. Most of the time I got small ones. The only time I would get large box ones was for Christmas or my birthday. Once in a while, you know, they'd surprise me and get me one. But anyway, I was eyeballing Ultra Magnus, and he was just so awesome, looked so cool in the box. She finally came over, his grandmother came over, and I put him back on the shelf, and she goes, is that a new one? And my friend said, yeah, it's the first time we both found him. And she asked me, she goes, have you got that one yet? And I said, no. And she said, well, go ahead and get it, let's go. And I'm like, well, my mom didn't give me any money. I don't have any money with me. She goes, I didn't ask you if you had any money. She says, go ahead and get it, let's go. So she bought it for me, and I'll never forget that. It was so awesome. Unfortunately, I sold it in my big purge of 2006. It was one of those figures, like I said, you know, I had so many memories with it. It really hurt to part with it. But I still have those memories in my mind and in my heart, so, you know, it's still like I have it. And then I had a reissue Ultra Magnus from a long time ago. I had that one mint and seal box, and that also went in the purge. And this is the first time I've had Ultra Magnus since, so I'm kind of pleased to have him. I know it's not a reissue. It does have a little chrome tarnishing for the age, and some of the looseness of joints, which you would expect with a vintage figure. But all in all, it's a very nice figure. The white parts on it are still bone white. He's still really nice. His stickers aren't in that bad a condition. He's really worth it. I picked one up. I picked him up for $82 shipped, which I thought was a great deal, especially for a vintage Ultra Magnus, seeing as how generally you can't get a reissue for less than $100. You know, so I feel pretty lucky.
I remember when the reissues were like $60 bucks.
And we thought that was really high, but now I kind of kill for a minty reissue. Well, I don't know. The U.S. release, I liked it. I didn't have one. Actually, I did have one, but I never opened it as well. But I did see that it had the extended really long missiles, which I thought looked kind of stupid.
He was like Smiling Bob. He had insight.
But I passed, you know, on opening it, since I had, at the time, I had the vintage one. But this one here, he comes with all of his pieces, even has the extra missiles and everything. So he is 100% complete, really nice shape. And I'll probably have a picture of it on the Enhanced podcast. So if you're listening to it on an iDevice that is capable of seeing the enhanced images, glance at your podcast or your iPod right now or device and check it out.
I think the only Ultra Magnus I had, I never had a vintage Ultra Magnus. The only ones I've ever owned are the reissues, so they all have the long missiles and rubber tires. If I were going to pick up a vintage, I would kind of like to find one with plastic tires, just so I could experience the other versions.
I believe the one with the plastic tires also had an unpainted face. You know, we found one in that comic shop there in Lexington that you bought your Headmasters at. There was one there. I don't know if it still is or not. And it was the plastics wheel version.
I know there was one version that didn't even have the windows, like the windshield inside the chest was missing.
Really?
So you could stick your finger all the way into the truck. And I was wondering, was that all the plastic wheels versions had no windshield, or was it just like some of the later ones?
Don't recall that version.
I know I've seen a couple of them, and I've heard people mentioning, you know, or I guess I've read people mentioning that as a kid they had the plastic wheeled version that had no windshield. And I didn't know if that was all plastic wheeled versions or if it was just You know, because for some reason in my head, I was thinking they went to plastic wheels, no windshield, and unpainted face, like a cost savings thing in a later production.
I knew about the plastic wheels and the unpainted face, but the missing windshield is completely new to me. I wasn't aware of that.
Hmm. I'll have to do some more research on that and find out.
Reporting directly from Hyacon, this is the Cybertron News Network.
Hall of Fame ballot is now online. You can vote for your favorite, your fan favorite character on the Hasbro website. Or is it Transformers.com or is it Hasbro's website? I believe it's Transformers.com.
I think it's Transformers.com. It's one of Hasbro's websites. I think they actually have the Transformers name.
I was trying to get it to where it's more specific. But we spoke last week on the podcast that each fan site voted on a number of characters to which would be added to the official ballot that would be held on Transformers.com, with the winner to be revealed in the Hall of Fame ceremony at BotCon this year in Pasadena.
I actually, in last week, we went over all the major websites, and you know, we apologized if we missed one, and there was actually a pretty major one that missed. Yes, the Transformers Club forums. I mean, after all, it is the Transformers Collectors Club that puts on BotCon, you know, and they're where the Hall of Fame ceremony will be, and yet they had their own voting and polling up on their website, and that was the one we forgot to mention.
Who won that
so
one?
So that was kind of our one,
By the way.
I don't remember the results off the top of my head, but I think it was very similar to everywhere else where you had Grimlock, Shockwave, and Erector at the top. I just remember seeing afterwards that they announced the results, and I saw the clubs in there, and it was like a day or two after we recorded, which has been 5 days ago now, so I've forgotten again, but you know what the results were. But I saw when they posted the results, like, oh, the club forum.
It never occurred to me either to look there. I'm registered there being a club member, but I rarely attend that forum simply because I absolutely detest the way the forums are laid out.
It's like a really old forum schematic. I mean, I don't know what program they're using, but it's like, I don't even think you can get updates for that software anymore. It's so outdated. That's what they've got. So, yeah, I'm like you. I don't go there just because I don't care for the layout. I don't care for the feel of the site, how you navigate it. It's just, it feels like 10 years ago. It feels like a website you would have seen in 2001 instead of 2011.
That aside, back to the Hall of Fame ballot, characters that are in the ballot, the ones that you that actually won out, you have the choice of Grimlock, Shockwave, Waspinator, Jazz, and yes, Erector.
Yep, he was high enough up in the polling on all the major sites that they put him.
They've actually gave him a little updated bio as well.
Yeah, it's interesting because they're okay. Let's face it, he's in there because it's a dick joke, and enough of the fandom came together that pushed for it and lobbied for it, and enough other people thought it was funny enough to go along with it that they got Erector in there. And it's because of his name. It almost sounds like erection. So it's a dick joke. Okay, so my first thought was that they, no matter how much he wins, they won't put him in. But he's there. But I do like that they stepped up with a new bio. So like, okay, we're going to kind of play along. We've got a sense of humor. You want a director in there, we'll put him in there. But we're not going to make any blatant dick jokes. They just went ahead and gave him a kind of semi-serious bio that actually makes the character sound pretty cool.
You know, the thing is, with the Rector, all the other characters will have some sort of animation to show in their nomination videos at the Hall of Fame, assuming that they do that again this year. What in the world are they going to do with Erector, who has no fiction whatsoever to draw from, aside from his tech spec?
Maybe my theory is that if they don't actually commission somebody to do some animation, we'll probably just see various images of his box art and toy. And I think they'll be playing the Smiling Bob Enzyte music along with it. Do, 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 do.
I really hope that it doesn't come to this, and I really hope that he doesn't win, simply for the reasons that we mentioned last week. But, you know, he's there. He's available to be voted for. So if you haven't cast your vote yet, you can vote once a day, according to the website. So go vote if you haven't yet already.
And if you're a fan of this podcast, you know, Weird Wolf and myself are, we've already decided we're going to vote for Grimlock pretty much every day, and we're going to make sure we go and vote every day, just because of our feelings for the whole Rector thing. Yeah, it's a funny joke, but the Hall of Fame is actually kind of classy, and it's no place for a dick joke in our opinion. So, you know, we're going to do everything we can to try to beat a Rector out. Now, if there's a whole bunch of people voting for a Rector, and then everybody else's, their votes are split among the other four, a Rector is going to get in. So if you're a fan of the podcast and you agree with us that you don't want a Rector in there, we'll kind of try to put our own little campaign together. Let's vote Grimlock in. Let's try to unite the vote for three guys,
you know, just as long as it's not a Rector. But, you know, if we focus on Grimlock, which I think is the most worthy of the other ones, you know, I mean, Shockwave, Waspinator, and Jazz are worthy of being in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. But Grimlock, I think, most of all, because not only for his G1 cartoon persona, but also his Marvel comic. I mean, shoot, he was the leader of the Autobots there for a long time in the comics. So
He was the one that found the Electrum. Nucleon. Mm-hmm. The Nucleon that made the Action Masters. I mean, he led the charge to go after that against all opposition, and you know, everybody saying that he shouldn't, and he did anyway. And so he was a pretty important character in the comics. He was great. You know, I mean, yeah, you can vote for the other three if you want. I mean, we're not going to tell you who to vote for. But, I mean, like I said, if the vote divided, you know, Rector has a pretty strong contingent of people who are making sure they vote daily to get him in there because they think it's just going to be hilarious for the dick joke to be in the Hall of Fame. So we do need to kind of try to unite some vote. You know, I'm Grimlock. That's who I'm voting for. Unfortunately, you know, unless listeners post in a thread on Geek Existence letting us know, you know, we don't know who you guys want to vote for, so we're just going to vote for the one we want to vote for and encourage you guys to come along beside us just to keep Erector out. Let's vote for Grimlock.
Moving on to our big story of the week, we've found out from a number of sources, the most reliable ones, I mentioned speaking to actual Hasbro retail merchandiser representatives. Actual people from Hasbro that go to stores and merchandise out products and make sure the products are being merchandised in proper way, and also communicate
putting up signage
and communicate information to stores from directly from Hasbro. We have found out that apparently Reveal the Shield, all forms of it, be it Deluxe, Legends, and Voyager classes, have been canceled in the United States.
But now, my understanding was that it was that the Deluxes aren't, because they've actually been showing up. There are stores have been getting the Deluxes. From what I heard was that it was the way this article reads is that it's the Scout class assortment that's been canceled because nobody's ordering it because they're still full of Hunt for the Decepticons, and the way they talked, it could also apply to the Legends assortment as well because of the same problem. Deluxes are actually getting ordered, so therefore they're not being canceled. But apparently all the major stores have so much backstock and overstock with the Scouts and the Legends that they're just not ordering anymore. And so Hasbro has decided, well, since nobody's ordering it, it's pointless to try to distribute it as far as from a financial standpoint, so therefore they're going to cancel those two. As far as I know, there was no mention of Deluxes and Voyagers being canceled, because those have actually been showing up. People have been finding them. I didn't want our listeners to be misled in thinking that the Deluxes were going to be hard to find and then go out and overpay on those.
Well, they are hard to find. You know, I mean, from...
Yeah, because they're not showing up en masse, but they are showing up. You bought a Perceptor in store.
Yes, I did, but I haven't seen one since, and I haven't seen any others of the Reveal the Shield. The only place I've ever seen Reveal the Shield, other than that one Lone Perceptor, Laser Rod Prime, and Bumblebee in that Kmart, were the first wave that was available at Kohl's way back in the very beginning of December. I have not seen. Now, I have Myers, Walmart's, Toys R Us, to a lesser extent. I haven't seen them at all at any of these stores. You know, so you know, with them canceling the Legends and the Scouts, it only, and I haven't seen any Voyagers at all in stores. So,
yeah, I think the idea though with the with the stores you mentioned, like I said, you know, for some reason Meijer just isn't ordering any more toys or waiting for the movie stuff. Walmart, I think, had the same problem where even with their deluxes, they had a bunch of Hunt for the Decepticon. But I think pretty much across the country, there have been a lot of reports between places like Kohl's. I've heard Toys R Us has had them. As a matter of fact, this Toys R Us, I've seen the Bumblebee there and read sightings forums where, you know, other local people in Lexington have found, you know, up to the second wave in this Toys R Us. It's just never when we're in there because they sell pretty quick. But they've been showing up. And like I said, Kmart's around the country have been getting them. So they have been shipping out. And, you know, I mean, yeah, they are hard to find, but as far as the idea of them being canceled, the Hasbro rep didn't mention them being canceled. And since they are turning up in stores, albeit rare, they are showing up. So I don't think that they, those size classes have been necessarily canceled. It's just at this point, you know, by saying these are canceled, it means even if the stores change their mind and decide, okay, we want to order some of those, too bad they've been canceled. They're not coming out here. And, you know, so, but I mean, the Luxes are showing up to the stores that are ordering them.
Okay, well, that's that part of the news, and you know, I mean, I'm this issue has been so far going. We've been talking about it since what, December, January, or mm-hmm. even November of last year. You know, I'm almost to the point where I'm tired of talking about it, to be honest. You know, it's got to the point where it's ridiculous. You know how difficult it is to get a hold of these figures, having to go the online toy store route and having to do it multiple times because if you don't get there within the first few minutes of them going live, being available, then you're not going to get it. You know, I'm getting really sick of that, mm-hmm. you know. It's times like this it becomes very trying to be a fan, in my opinion, and collector. You know, the characters that you really want is so difficult to get a hold of. But the ones that you could care less about are in such an abundance in the store.
Yeah, I don't understand why Hasbro. I mean, you got to partially blame them. You know, why weren't, you know, Perceptor and Retgar and G2 Prime, you know, Trax and Jazz, why weren't they in Hunt for the Decepticons around the holidays so that we would be swimming in those guys? Because they're the popular ones. But instead, you know, they had the last wave of Hunt for the Decepticons. You know, they had it packed full of, you know, Sea Attack Ravage, Jetblade, Tuner Skids. I mean, characters that had other releases not too long ago in other colors that shelf warmed. And so then these things hit en masse and they're shelf warming. And so that's why these stores aren't ordering the Hunt for the Decepticon stuff because they're sitting on so much of that. And, you know, all Hasbro would have had to done is, well, like, for example, you had Hailstorm. And then the very next wave, the first wave of Real Shield, you got Mindset, which is his repaint. Why does the same toy that, you know, I mean, I heard, you know, some people like it that have it, it's a cool toy, but it's not particularly a character that the collectors really care about as far as, you know, I compared to, say, Jazz. So why does he get back-to-back toys when that could have been a good spot to put Retgar?
Yeah, and we've talked about this before. I mean, it's to the point where it really is pissing me off. You know, if I sound irritated, I am. About this issue. You know, Hasbro has been around for how many years? And you know, if you're going to be a company, I know that if we confront them about this issue at BotCon, they're just give us, well, marketing decides on that and everything like that. You know, they'll just kind of glaze over it and say marketing decides on what figures go on what wave and, you know, the release schedule. Okay, if your marketing team are the ones that are doing this, then I'll be looking for a new marketing team because they are doing a really piss-poor job on this and they, you know, I'm not saying, you know, get out the pitchforks and stuff like that, but for crying out loud, you know, it's like the company that I work for, here recently, over the last year or two, they've been making so many stupid decisions. I don't know why. they would do certain things that you just, you're like, why? You know, for the love of all things sacred, make a choice that makes sense. You know, I mean, I don't have a degree in marketing. I don't have any college experience whatsoever of sales in that aspect, but I do work in sales in my job, and, you know, I know it from a practical sense, and it's, this just does not make sense. And knowing that it...
Common sense and experience cannot be taught.
Exactly. And, you know, you'd think that these people that have the college experience or education would know better than this. But no, they don't. I mean,
well, I have to wonder, because I know they blame a lot on marketing. Cause it seems like the Hasbro guys, as far as the designers, they know what we like. They know what's going to sell well. They know what's going to appeal.
Oh, absolutely.
To
I mean, we wouldn't have a wind charger and an awesome Perceptor and a Rekgar like we have now. I mean, they know what we want. They're making what we want.
Well,
that they can't get it out to the fans.
Oh, well, they mentioned when they did Galvatron in Universe that he had to be a tank because of marketing. You know, because marketing didn't want a space cannon. You know, same reason why the deluxe class Cosmos they designed didn't come out. Because marketing said, well, you know, kids aren't going to buy a green flying saucer. You know, and I have to wonder, you know, is their marketing, does Hasbro just have like one marketing group that handles all their brands, for each brand kind of does their own designs or toys, and they present them to marketing, and marketing kind of ultimately says yes or no? Or I wonder if their marketing, if they have like a specific marketing department for each brand. Like, is there a marketing department just deals with Transformers? And then a marketing department deals just with G.I. Joe? Because if they don't, if it's all like just one marketing that handles all Hasbro properties, that's one change they could make, which I'm sure they're probably not listening to this podcast, but you know, maybe somebody, if you know somebody at Hasbro, forward this to them if you think this is a good idea. But they should have specific marketing departments for each brand and hire people who are familiar with it, know it, and love it, just like with their designers. They have people that know it and love it doing it. You know, kids that grew up with Transformers are now designing and engineering Transformers, which is why we're getting such awesome toys. But if their marketing was along the same lines, you have marketing people that love Transformers, and that's all they do is Transformers, they would be able to make these decisions, because they would be able to look at it and say, okay, you know, Sea Attack Ravage, Mindset, and Jetblade are not going to sell as well as Rekgar, Trax, and Jazz. So let's put Rekgar, Trax, and Jazz in the assortment that's going to be out
around
the holidays.
At least mix them up.
Because
you know, I mean, if you're going to release a Jetblade and a Sea Attack Ravage, make a wave that has like Rekgar, Sea Attack Ravage, and Jazz, and maybe Mindset. You know, I mean, at least mix it up.
And then the next wave have Trax. Yeah. Yeah, like I said, mix it up so that you don't have three shelf warmers in one case, which is exactly what we had. You know, and like I said, I think if their marketing, if they had a marketing, you know, specifically for Transformers, with people who know and love Transformers, they would have done that. And you wouldn't have all this stock. I mean, yeah, you may have had a ton of Sea Attack Ravages left over, but it's only because everything else in the case sold, because it would have been winners. But when everything else in the case is the Jet Blades and the Mindsets, or you know, whatever his first release was called, it's shelves are clogged. I mean, every store I go into, that's all I see. Because, you know, they had too many figures in that assortment that nobody wanted, and they just sat there.
You know, I really hope that when BotCon rolls around, we're able to corner somebody from Hasbro, be it Aaron Archer or someone.
Fan rage.
I don't want to, you know, fan rage on them. But, you know, just if we can talk to them on the podcast, you know, maybe we can, you know, ask them questions about marketing and how they go about it. You know, and that's, you know, before we move on to our next subject, I really don't want to continue talking about this. I mean, like I said before, we're kind of beating a dead horse here. But, you know, that brings me to another idea that we have. Our plans for BotCon, we would really like to have an interview or two with somebody, be it a voice actor or somebody from Hasbro if we can. If you know, once we find out people that are going to be at BotCon, well, we know Hasbro is going to be there. If you're a listener and you have a question that you would like for us to ask the person from Hasbro, we'll just throw this one out right now. If you have a question for somebody at Hasbro, be it Aaron Archer or whoever, what would you like to ask for us to ask them to answer on the podcast? Now, I'm sure we won't be able to keep them very long. I would be surprised if we can keep them for more than 5 minutes, to be honest, with all the people that's going to be there and possibly other podcasts that's going to be wanting time with them. But if we can spend a little bit of time with somebody from Hasbro, we do want to ask them some questions, but we want to ask them what you want to hear from them. This is one thing I would personally like to ask them. It's about the marketing and how they go about doing this and how they make these decisions. There are other questions that we could ask them. So if you...
And also, even if we can't get them to come record with us as far as a podcast, even for 5 minutes, you know, which I'm sure we couldn't probably get them to come back to the room or anything like that. But, you know, even if they're not willing to let us record them, you know, like we ask them if they'd like, you know, ask questions for a podcast, and they won't, even if they won't let us record them, you know, we may just kind of nonchalantly, like I will let you ask them, you know, Dron, if they want to ask, you know, answer some questions for a podcast. And if they say no, I won't let them know I'm with you. And if they say no, you know, I know Aaron Archer is very approachable on Friday night, like at the bar.
We actually got him drunk
at the hotel bar. Yeah, so, you know, what I will do is if, you know, he don't want to do it for the podcast, well, then I'll just come up and talk to him, you know, just kind of shoot the breeze and ask him a few questions at the bar, you're kind of off the record. And so we won't have a recording, but at least we can ask him some questions and see what answers he gives. So if our listeners give us some questions they'd like answered, I can try to work them in there and try to get what answers I can just kind of just to discuss.
But yeah, I know last year we had him cornered, per se. We were kind of sitting around the bar down there. You know, I don't drink, but I mean, I'm sitting there enjoying my Coke product and he was enjoying a beer and we were just kind of casually talking, nothing on the record. But he was kind of shooting some questions our way, as fans, asking us, you know, well, what draws us to Transformers? Mm-hmm. What would we like to see in the Transformers brand? And we gave him some ideas. Of course, I plugged the Headmasters pretty heavily. And he did kind of raise his eyebrow and he did say something about Headmasters. You know, you never know. We've got some great ideas, and those are great ideas that we posed.
Well, I think since then, I mean, we talked to him at last year's BotCon. Didn't like Highbrow and Mind Wipe come out after that?
I believe so, but you know, they were only in name only. But as far right. We were talking to him about gimmicks, because he did ask us what gimmicks we liked and what gimmicks we didn't like. I do remember that. And you know, he said, I do remember him saying something along the lines of, if I could only tell you what I know, you know, is coming down the road here very shortly, you know, and, mm-hmm. You know, at that time, I honestly believe, he knew about, Perceptor and, Jazz and Trax and Wheeljack and, Scourge.
Yeah, all that stuff was revealed during the actual, like, the designers panel, which we had to leave early for because we had to be at work the next day and it was a 13-hour drive. But we heard, you know, we read about it. So, yeah, I think when we were talking to him, that stuff hadn't been revealed yet, so he couldn't. But I think you're right. He was referring to that stuff, which we would have found out on Sunday if we'd been able to stay.
Yeah, which we will this year, but, you know, you never know what you're able to get a hold of whenever you're talking to him. So it'd be really cool to be able to ask him questions that you want to hear, whether we're able to record them or not. I'm sure we'll be able to access him again. He was very accessible last year. You know, whenever he wasn't in a panel or something other, if you saw him, you could walk up to him and ask him basically anything. Whether he could answer you or not is a different question, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's some questions he's obviously not going to be able to answer. I mean, things that Hasbro wants to be tight-lipped on, like, you know, upcoming releases and things that are going to be kept secret. But, I mean, just questions of, like, how the operation works. Like well, I want to ask him about the marketing. That's a question I plan to ask if I get the chance. You know, kind of probe why isn't there specific marketing for each brand. But, you know, I mean, those are the kind of questions we can expect to reasonably get answers to. You know, you're not going to get an answer to... You know, questions like, you know, hey, can you tell us what the next releases are going to be? You know, down the road, what are you all planning? Because, again, they got to keep their stuff tight-lipped because they like to surprise us.
Well, so, and also for, design purposes, too. I'm sure they can't really tell us much about, what the gimmicks are going to be or something, because, that stuff can be easily stolen by other companies.
Well, not just that, but plans change. They may be planning something, and they don't want to get us all hyped up. Oh, that sounds awesome, and then for some reason they can't come through with it. Maybe the designs aren't safety approved, and so they fail all the safety tests, so they have to scrap it. Or maybe, again, marketing says, no, we don't think that play pattern will be successful, and they scrap it. And then they get our hopes all up, and then it gets scrapped, and then we're all mad at them. Why didn't you release that? So that's also another potential reason they won't tell us, upcoming things.
Go on the forums and please post your questions. We'd love to hear from you. Moving along, we heard some tidbits from the Transformers Club and Brian Savage. He gave us a little note that the freebie toy for this year, Sideburn, will ship after BotCon. And we also got a little note that we don't know the exact date, but the pre-orders for G2 Ramjet and Cheetor, some Collectors Club exclusives that will be later up for purchase later this year, the pre-orders will go up at the end of April.
Yeah, they mentioned that it was because of religious holidays, which was it? I know they mentioned Easter and what was it, Passover? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because of Passover and Easter, they didn't want to put them up until after those holidays passed. So Easter is, I think, the 24th, which is Sunday the 24th of April. So it's that last week, sometime during that week, is when those pre-orders are going to go up. And, personally, I just want Ramjet. I really don't care that much about animated Cheetor. I may or may not pick one up just to have it. I picked up a Shattered Glass Cyclonus last year but ended up selling it. But I picked it up just to have it. But I definitely want a Ramjet, at least one. And, I hope these don't go as quick as Punch Counter Punch. I did manage to get that in because, followed him on Twitter when they said it went up. I went, ordered it on my phone. I didn't even wait till I got home. And he sold out pretty quick. Did he sell out in days or was it hours?
I think it was hours because I wasn't able to get in on the Punch Counter Punch it action. I really wanted that one, too.
Yeah, he went really fast. It was... So hopefully the Ramjet's in greater numbers or not as sought after, but either way, I'm gonna have to do it from my phone as soon as it goes up. So that following week, it's like every, I drive a, I don't know if the listeners, I don't know if I ever mentioned it or not, but I drive a tractor trailer and I make multiple stops throughout the day. So pretty much every time I stop at a traffic light or back into a loading dock somewhere, I'm gonna be hitting the refresh button on the browser on my phone. Is it up yet? Is it up yet? Is it up yet? And I'll be doing that from Monday all the way into the week until they go up, because I really don't want to miss that Ramjet.
Further BotCon note, if you're planning on taking a tour, one of the BotCon tours, and you have not signed up for the tours yet, the cutoff date will be May 2nd. So if you're planning on attending one of those, please be sure to get your registration in before May 2nd, and you'll be insured to get in on the tours. I know that they're saying that the reason they have to do this by May 2nd is that they have to finalize the tickets and everything and with the people that they're organizing the tours through. So please be advised to get that in as soon as possible if you haven't already and you're planning to do so. We'll move on to our last topic of discussion this week, Transformers Prime episode discussion, Speed Metal. I will insert a spoiler warning here because we are going to be talking about the episode in detail. So if you have not seen the episode Speed Metal from Transformers Prime, you may want to plug your ears and go la 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 really quick and loudly. Until you're able to watch that and then come back and listen to this segment of the podcast. Otherwise, we're going to spoil you now.
Okay, so what's your thoughts on Speed Metal?
It was a very nice episode. I liked it. I'm not much on the episodes that are very, very darkly lit because my eyesight isn't that great. And this was one of those episodes where a lot of it takes place at night. But I do have to admit, you know, this is another one of those episodes that really shows off how beautiful the animation is in the show. Now, I know you noticed a couple animation errors, per se, but I noticed one of them, but the other one I didn't notice it as much. But, you know, you're going to have some errors, I would assume. But I'll let you talk about those here in a minute. But my overall feeling of the show, I really liked it. There wasn't enough prime in it, in my opinion. I hate the fact that Bumblebee beeps and boops and you can't understand what he says. It's a whole lot of the Lassie syndrome. Like, what's that, Bumblebee? You're saying someone fell in a well? Oh, you know.
Well, I do have to like the one part, though, because normally he's with Raph. But Jack was using him this week, and because they were infiltrating, you know, some Jack's trying to impress a girl, so they were doing some illegal street racing, and so he was using Bumblebee, and Bumblebee was beeping and booping trying to tell him something, and I really liked Jack's line when he says, "I'm not Raph, I can't understand you."
Yeah, that was pretty funny. A little brief synopsis of the episode: the Decepticon Knockout races humans for fun in his spare time. Much to the a testament of Lord Starscream. He keeps pointing that out to Knockout, that he is Lord Starscream, not Air Commander Starscream, because in his mind, in Starscream's mind, Megatron is dead and will not be revived. I suspect that he will be eventually, but in all intents and purposes, Starscream believes Megatron is dead, so he is Lord Starscream. And he really tries to knock that home with Knockout. But Knockout winds up racing the Autobot Bumblebee along with Jack in these human street races, that they illegal street races that they hold at night. And he also winds up kidnapping one of Jack's rivals, or Jack's main rival in the show. I forget his name. And he believes that it is Jack because he mistakes the rival as Bumblebee's human companion.
Which actually would have been Raph. Yeah.
But the Autobots obviously stop him, and the girl that that Jack is trying to impress, he winds up getting the girl at the end of the episode, as far as getting to take her on a ride on his motorcycle.
Which was RC.
Which was RC.
Yeah, because originally he was going to give her a ride at the beginning, and RC would have none of it. You know, she's like, I think she told him, I'm not your wingman. But then, you know, by the time it all gets to the end, he ends up getting to give her the ride on the motorcycle. You know, I guess RC kind of sees, okay, well, this is Jack. He's trying to get the girl, and, you know, if he's my friend, I should be his wingman. Yeah. So she kind of comes around,
and you know, it goes without being said, but you know, the it's almost like they're condoning high school kids who are able to drive, condoning them being in illegal street races.
Yeah, because there was no repercussions about how, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, was
there? Yeah, they just like, didn't even mention it. They just went about it like, hey, this is something high school kids with really hot racing cars do. You know, maybe so, maybe not. But, you know, they didn't let on like, hey, this is something you should not be doing. I found that kind of funny.
There was no moral dilemma in there. Yeah,
You know, it's like they took the moral compass aspect of Transformers. You know, how almost every episode had some sort of moral compass in it. You know, it's like, okay, this is bad, but you know, we're going to, even though we're portraying it, this is kind of bad. You shouldn't be doing it.
Or usually, like if the person, you know, gets involved in this illegal street racing, something negative happens to teach the kids that are watching it, learn, okay, this is why you shouldn't have done it. Look how bad it ended up. But, of course, the only bad thing that happened was the involvement of a Decepticon, and that's not going to happen in the real world. So the kids didn't learn the lesson of, hey, you shouldn't do this.
So it's kind of odd that that wasn't there. It's very noticeable in this episode, in my opinion. But that being said, you know, it was a pretty good episode.
What I liked about it is, at first glance, I kind of thought Carnival from Armada. You know, it was an episode that did nothing to push the overall story arc of the series or even the season. You know, it really didn't. But then at the same time, it was still an enjoyable episode. And I think what it is what's been missing from Transformers for a while, and what felt so strange, is it was pretty much just a character-building episode. You know, this was to give us a little insight, you know, another view, a little more, you know, of Bumblebee. It was the insight, and it's, you know, it truly is Raph, the only one who can understand him, as well as Knockout. And we got some really good character development of Knockout here as far as to learn more about that character. And we're not used to that, because anymore, you know, Transformers usually just kind of pushes their overall story arc, or I think animated kind of did it a little bit, but it was kind of refreshing to see an episode that wasn't pushing the major drama of the series. It was just like, okay, here's some characters, get to know them in a fun episode. And, you know, I thought it was kind of neat. I mean, we learned a little about Jack. We learned a little more about Bumblebee. We also saw another side of RC. You know, it's almost kind of like, you know, the way she was reacting to Jack, but between the racing and then sneaking around and doing it by taking Bumblebee, and then she was all like, well, wait till I can get a hold of him. You know, and then when she was fighting Knockout and he saw it, he was like, there's my girl. So, I mean, there was, you know, character building between, you know, Jack and RC individually, as well as their relationship with each other. And as I said, you know, she was against him giving the girl a ride, but then she came around. You had the Knockout characterization. You know, it was just refreshing to see an episode where the fate of the world wasn't in the balance, but it was still fun to watch, and we learned more about some of these characters so that down the road we will care more about them, and so that, you know, if we have another cliff jumper type moment, it'll have some impact because we'll know the characters
more. Yeah. What was the animation errors that you noticed? I noticed you didn't mention those.
Okay. Yeah. The two animation errors I saw, there may have possibly been more. These are just the two that jumped out at me. Was one of them as Jack was riding on RC when his rival, the other school kid that was trying to get him to race, you know, because they were both trying to impress the same girl. You know, he was like wanting to do it, but RC was still kind of like, no, I'm not going to be your wingman. I'm not condoning this. And so when the light turns green, RC just kind of speeds off, and Jack's all kind of just flailing around on the bike, you know, because they're like, she's like, I'm getting him out of the situation before he gets into something. And then, of course, the next light is red, and so he comes to a, you know, RC comes to a stop, and then the guy pulls up beside of him again, you know, and then they end up, you know, accepting the challenge to race later. But as she was coming up to that light, it's like a head-on view looking down the street, and they're coming towards the camera. I noticed, because the front tire on RC, you could see the tread and the tread pattern, and the tire was not rolling. It was like gliding. You know, she was just kind of scooting down the street. And it wasn't like the brakes were locked up skidding. She was just rolling to a stop, but the wheel wasn't rolling. At first, I thought it was kind of strange because it's like, okay, you know, why wasn't the wheel moving? Okay, animation error. Wasn't that noticeable because it was a front view of the tire and it was at the bottom of the screen. It wasn't like from the side of, you know, wheel not moving. But then the other one was the girl that Jack was trying to, you know, win over. You know, she had her hair in a ponytail. And through all the episode, the ponytail kind of moved and flowed like hair. But there was one scene where she's walking down the street and the ponytail was just sticking straight out the back, stiff as a board. And she even, like, would turn her head and it looked like a wind vane turning. I mean, it's just sticking straight out and was moving. That was kind of blaring because her head was taking up most of the screen because it was a close-up of her and the hair wasn't moving. So that animation error really jumped out at me. They didn't really take away from the episode as far as being enjoyable, but they were noticeable. And I would have thought in the days of, you know, 3D animation, that kind of stuff would be behind us. I would have thought most of that would be automated to where any time RC's moving along the ground that the wheels would turn, you know, in unison with the speed she's moving across the ground. I would have thought that was all done by computer, kind of automatic. You know, same way with the hair. I figured they kind of put the physics in there. This is the way the hair move, you know, should move and react, and that as the character is moved in the modeling process, that the hair would just kind of naturally react because it would be programmed to. But apparently it's not, and so if the animators kind of skip over that or get in a hurry, you can have stiff hair and non-turning wheels.
Anything else you want to mention about this episode before we close?
They played up Knockout's vanity a little more, so, you know, he's apparently really concerned with his appearance.
Yeah.
I think he's evil Decepticon Sunstreaker.
Yeah, you know, he comes across to me as that type of character. I can see why you'd think that.
Well, I mean, yeah, when Starscream was going to punish him for disobeying and going out racing against his will, his punishment was scratching his finish.
But I believe that'll do it.
It's like, don't mess up my hair!
I believe that'll do it for this week of Geek Existence Transformers. Again, if you have any questions for us to ask anybody from Hasbro, Let us hear about it on the forums. We, you know, really want to get things rolling on there. If you have anything else, I'm kind of drawing a blank right now. I'm getting kind of tired.
Just more suggestions to the listeners. You know, we would love to do listener questions. We still haven't received any yet. Not just for, you know, Hasbro guys at BotCon. That's still a few weeks off. But just stuff you'd like to hear us answer. You know, just shoot us some questions. You know, we do this podcast. Yeah, we do it, you know, partially for us because we enjoy talking about Transformers. But we do it mostly for the listeners. We want to put on a show. So if you have questions you'd like us to answer, you know, submit your listener questions on the board.
Absolutely. You know, and we're on iTunes. Please go on iTunes and rate us. You know, help us get the word out. You know, I know we have some listeners. I follow the feed burner feed and look at the statistics. I know we have actually quite a few number of listeners right now. So, but you know, thank you for listening, and I hope you continue to listen and are enjoying the podcast as we put them out. But you know, if you could please rate us, hopefully you give us a good rating and give us a good review. We're still new again. This is only our 22nd episode. We're still kind of learning some things. We'll only get better with time. But getting the word out there so more people can enjoy us is first and foremost on us. You know, maybe Greg and I should make a t-shirt or something other and wear it at BotCon. It might help get the word out. That being said, I believe we'll close for this week, and we will see you next time.
Hope you enjoyed the show.
This has been Geek Existence Transformers, a GeekExistence.com presentation. Check out our other podcasts, Geek Existence Gaming for the gaming geek in you, and Geek Existence Science and Tech for your sci-fi, science, and tech interests. Both are available on iTunes as well as our website. You can interact with us by visiting our forums on our website at geekexistence.com/forums, or by following us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekexistence. Search for us on Facebook and send us a friend request. We'd also love to hear from you via email. Our address is geekexistence@gmail.com. Your hosts for this episode were Weird Wolf 1975 and Insane Galvatron. No hamsters or squirrels were harmed in the making of this podcast.